Welcome to the United Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I want to thank our good friends at Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish has been a loyal supporter since the very beginning with the podcast and the coaching clinics. Follow them on social media. They put awesome stuff out there all the time on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Dish B-Ball on all social media. Also, coaches, check out UnitedBasketballPlus.com. It's the newest resource we have. Use the promo code UBPLUS, that's capital U, capital B, plus, and receive 10% off for an annual membership. Coaches, enjoy the podcast. I want to welcome John Stanzik to the podcast at Lake Travis High School in Texas. He's an assistant coach there. We're going to talk some Princeton offense, which I know on United Basketball Plus, we have several great videos from that and from college coaches. Now it's great to talk to a high school coach who implemented this with his basketball team. So I'm excited about this topic, Coach. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. I'm a longtime listener, first time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is good because I know that through the a lot of schools are running Princeton style sets, in college and high school, and there's different when people say Princeton, honestly, it brings out four or five different thoughts or types of teams. Like people might think the true Princeton who upset UCLA back in the day, to Richmond who kind of ran a hybrid of Princeton, to the Air Force, to UAH, Lenny Acuff at Lipscomb. So, first of all, what were you doing before Princeton and why did you decide to make this move?
Well, we adjust our offense a lot based on our personnel. In high school, you kind of get what you get. And some 4 years ago, we had a really good post player named DJ Thorpe, son of Otis Thorpe, with the Rockets. And he was 6'9", really dominant. So we kind of went with that Villanova four out, one in, where we featured the post. And, when he graduated, it's hard to really replace that. So we've done some other stuff. We've done it in years past where we ran lots of sets. We've done some read and react stuff. And we did a lot of blocker mover stuff over the Tyven. We had a group of about 10 seniors this year, and we didn't have a ton of size, but we had a lot of really good outside shooting, and we had a lot of really smart players that could think one or two passes ahead. And we were just, we lost in the playoffs the year before in round one against a team that we really felt like that we had the potential to beat, but we struggled against pressure in the half court. And we were looking for stuff that would allow us to utilize our IQ versus pressure. And so you named one of them, Air Force. I have a good buddy named Cody San Miguel that was assistant coach up there. And he turned me on kind of to this deal. And we just started doing our research, about how we could utilize our outside shooting and our IQ in a way that wouldn't feature our lack of height. And we kind of came upon this and, created this amalgamation between all the different teams that you named along with Nebraska Wesleyan that run this.
Yeah, no, again, I'm glad you brought Nebraska West in, one of my favorite teams to watch. And they've proven that, and as well as University of Richmond as well, they've proven that you can run this style and be a high-scoring team. Like, you can still play fast and with great pace, or you can really slow it down if you feel like you need to run 25, 30 seconds, off the shot clock or into it. So it's thought of as a very high IQ offense. And I have my experience. I'll comment after you comment. What are your thoughts about that? Like, they is so high IQ. Coaches just kind of like, we just can't do it. What do you think?
I think it's complicated. I think it's a yes and a no answer. Like, yes, it is high IQ where you have to allow the players to make decisions based on the defense. At its core, Princeton is really read and react. The defense is going to present you with an option, and you're going to make a decision based off of that. But I'd say no, because when you think IQ, you're thinking you got to have this special knowledge or this huge skill set or just this ability to process tons of information at a real quick speed. What we've really found is that, you're usually presented with, one, two, or three options that the defense gives you. So as long as you train, yourself, when we see this is what we're doing. Like, if I'm coming off the screen and they're trailing me close, we're going to tight curl this and someone else is going to pop out. Or if they jump it, and trying to get up the line that we backdoor it. You know, so you don't have to know a ton. You just have to know what you're looking for. And through repetition, and we utilize film a ton, you know, through repetition and film, I think that we were able to really train that IQ in a way that I think anybody could. So, yeah, I think when you look at it, you think, oh, high IQ is kind of scary. I don't know if we have the kids that can do it. But you know, I feel confident that anybody really could.
No, I think the biggest issue with the offense is it's called the Princeton offense. I mean, if it was called the University of Georgia offense or the Florida offense or the mm-hmm. but the problem is we think Princeton and we're like, oh, my gosh, I don't have a kid who can get in Princeton. Heck, I, as a coach, I could never even get in Princeton. So we just can't do it. So let's just talk about how you installed it. What was your starting point?
Well, we really started. I mean, it started after that playoff loss. I mean, in the locker room, literally right afterwards when we got home, you know, we're sitting around and you have that feeling that you have at the end of the season. And we're looking around and we're thinking, dang, you know, I think we could have won. You know, we need to do something different. And, you know, we're not the most physical or athletic team. What can we do to utilize this? And it was just kind of like an aha moment. It all clicked with everyone. And then we started doing research. You know, luckily enough, like I said, and you're familiar with NWU, you know, we were able to get in contact with Coach Wellman and actually an assistant coach that just left to be a head coach, Chris Hamilton. You know, he invited us to come up there and watch practice. And so I went up there for 3 or 4 days and spent as much time as I could in the gym with them, picking their brain, watching their practice. You know, they have a JV team up there too. And I watched how they implemented. So there was a difference, you know, in how they ran it with their, you know, their main varsity team and their JV team. And so we were able to kind of pick up this, you know, these building blocks. Where do you start? You know, what are you looking for? You know, they would lay tape down on the floor in a certain way that would guide players and, you know, this decision box. And when we get in here, we're looking for this, that, or the other. And if we see those things, this is how we react. And so, you know, we started with a lot of 3-on-0 stuff and where we're just getting the patterns down. And then we would, you know, we would progress to like some 3-on-2 where a coach would, you know, be that third defender, but they're stationary and they're just kind of, you know, guarding the ball. And then we would go into 3-on-3. And once we had all of that down, then we would start progressing into some larger stuff. But all the while, we'd be watching film of 5-on-5. So kind of that whole part, whole teaching method. We'd give them everything. This is what we're looking to do. Then we'd break it down, you know, because at first it looks like a lot. You know, if the defense does this, we go this way, and the backside is doing that, and guys just start glazing over. You know, they get lost in it. So we break it down little by little. Do it on the court, and then start to slowly put it together into 5-on-5. And it's almost like a snowball rolling down the hill. Once you start getting it built up, it fuels itself. The growth and the learning fuels itself. And I've got tons of video and stuff if anybody ever wanted that I'd be willing to share.
So how did you start 3-on-3?
We really targeted the point system. We liked the way that it could kind of be 5-out because, again, we weren't really big. And, you know, our biggest player, I mean, he was 6'5", but it really had more kind of like guard-like skills. And so we really liked that. And so we would start, you know, with 3-on-3, we'd brush somebody down. Starting off, that would be a coach. And we would just work on the brush entry into the split screen and decisions out of the split screen. And once we felt really comfortable with that, you know, the reject curl, hands back, then we'd move on into what does the post do once they throw the hands back? And are we going to ball screen that? Are we going to dribble handoff? Or, you know, are we going to cut and then, you know, go through whatever? And each step along the way, we kind of, you know, I also picked up a guy named Chris Dorsey that's a coach.
He's good.
And yeah. So I was able to – I purchased his thing, and I was able to talk with him some, and he's got a great detailed plan. And we kind of followed that and then, you know, went off a little bit here and there, but you know, every step along the way that we're teaching this, we're talking about the decisions in it. And really the decisions in everything is kind of similar. So if you're in away or if you're in over or same side, you're going to do really a lot of the same stuff. If you know, on the backside, if you're in away, you're doing a lot of the same stuff as in over or same.
Yep.
And so once you kind of pick it up, you already know it. And then when you go into the next thing, they're like, oh, I remember that. That's similar to this. And so that's, you know, we started with the brush and the split screen and then progressed from there.
And so, and for coaches listening, I think you said it once, the point series, I just call it rub series.
Yeah.
You've got that brush action going on. So how did you guys implement the back door? And
Kind of both. We definitely had some calls where we would set up back doors and we'd anticipate them. We usually hit those more just because you know exactly what you're looking for. But, you know, we're coming from kind of a read and react background, especially with our sub varsities. We run an offense, this patternless type offense that you could kind of consider like a Princeton light. It's really read and react, but there's, you know, split screens out of it. There's ball screens with, you know, backside pin down flare type action. So they were really kind of familiar with the rules. Like if both my defender has both feet above the 3-point line, automatic back door. If I'm moving towards a handoff and he's in front of me or I see the back of his head, automatic back door. So we already kind of had that background. So I think we were able to pick it up a little bit easier because of that. And we run that, you know, a lot with our sub varsity. So, you know, both we would get it both. If they were pressuring, we'd get some, you know, natural back doors. And then, you know, we had a couple calls.
Yeah, that's how I saw it. And even when talking to other coaches who do this at like the Division I level, you know, they say, well, that we do get back doors, but it's, you read it, but they don't look at it as the backdoor offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you get that more unathletic team playing the super unathletic or super athletic team up in the lanes. You're going to get more, but honestly, you should get that no matter what offense you play. Like I mm-hmm. think every offense, I don't care if you're running swing or flex or whatever, you should have built-in reads for when to go backdoor. And like you said, 2 feet above the free throw line, you see the back of their head. Back to my original question. Sorry, I got sidetracked. So point was your main action. Did you do anything else or did you pretty much just find a way to usually get back into point? Because you guys don't have a shot clock, correct?
We don't, unfortunately, not yet. Fingers crossed, though. that is the biggest thing about point is it does get a bit repetitive, especially if you get to where you restart and you've exhausted your options and you try to rebrush or something. And that brush pass, when you're scouted, can become dangerous. You know, and that's one of the weak points of it. Not only for the fact that it's easy to see coming, but you're usually putting the ball into your five's hands, you know, above the free throw line to the 3-point line somewhere up there. So that was a weak point of it. You know, we tried to get creative into the ways that we got into it. So we'd run it out of some 5-out stuff. We'd, you know, run it out of some 4-low stuff and break up into it. So we tried to disguise it some with some early action or some dummy action, and then we would mix it up with some set plays to where it looks like, you know, you're going to brush and then something else happens. So we tried to be as unpredictable as you can, but you hit the nail right on the head there that the point action does become predictable. And if you know what you're looking for, you can kind of guess what's coming.
So let's just describe that for the listener, talking about that point action, where your five is getting the ball, how they get the ball. Let's just, in case no one's ever really looked at this offense, just talk us through that just briefly.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Yeah, so your basic starting positions, you know, you got two guards and two wings. The wings are about free throw line extended, almost out of bounds. Your guards are really, you know, depending on the size of your court, you know, in high school court, we share it with volleyball. It's right around that volleyball line, which is kind of around the timeline. And then your post is really below the block. In one dunker spot or the other, you know, they can be head under the net also if they're not, that kind of helps you in your brush because you can come up either way. And when you brush, you're, one of your guards is going through and going to the opposite corner, and he and the post are going to run by each other. When we're working it, we run by and we tell them, keep your elbow to your hip and then be able to clap hands with each other as you run by. You know, that's a good way when you're running that 3-on-0 stuff to learn that spacing of the rub. So you're not screening for each other, but you're running past each other. So where your defenders, they either run into the other person or they get behind you. And that usually frees your post up to come up and catch in that pinch post spot, which is, you know, above the elbow, about the 3-point line. And then, you know, you're in 5-out basically.
What teams decide to switch that? But what is you on the switching if they switch that?
Well, we had a couple of different things. You know, one thing we would come together like we were going to brush and then go opposite ways, like fake a brush. So instead of crossing, we'd come together and then bounce back out the same way you come. If they jump up in front, you know, that's an automatic back door. Our posted back door, we'd replace it with the wing. And then, you know, sometimes we would just spin and go the other way. And we'd have action out of that too. So we tried to vary up what we did, and then, you know, probably could have done a better job of it, but we really tried to make teams pay that did that. Like if they did switch, now usually we've got a 1 or 2 guard defender on a 5 post player, you know, we'd send them back in and we try to exploit that matchup. So instead of him going through to the corner, we'd send him back in. We try to look for a duck in or, you know, pass it over to the wing for a post entry or something like that. And that's a kind of a scouting report team thing. If we knew a team coming up switched a lot, you know, we'd set that up, you know, make it obvious we're about to brush and then have a planned post entry.
So when you're, which player for you mainly, so let's say I'm the point guard, and this word listeners, which use our imagination, I'm the point guard. I'm bringing it down, you know, between the lane line and the wing. I've got my 2. Who is your trailer parallel with the point guard? Is that a 4 or 3? Was that your player that kind of brushed down, or would you do a dribble handoff? Would you?
It really depends on how we got the ball, because we did want to play fast. You know, so we trained it positionless. We spent a lot of time in practice training our fives how to do the wings and our you know, guards how to do the post. That's actually something we picked up from Coach Wellman. At NW, he talked about, you know, posting up your guards and like, well, you know, we don't really have guards that are combo guards like that. I said, yeah, that's fine. Most people don't, but your guard is going to be better at doing post moves offensively than their guard is going to be guarding you defensively because you work on it more. So we really emphasize the positionless thing. So, you know, if they made a shot and we were ready to walk it up, it's usually going to be the 4. That's usually who we have inbounding the ball. But depending on who got the rebound and where the outlet went and how quickly we came down, it could have really been anybody, because we stress when we get across half court, we're looking for great shots. If we get one early, awesome. If not, we call it get to an X, because when we're teaching it, we put, you know, painter's tape down on the floor with blue painter's tape, and we just say get to an X. And whatever the closest X is, you know, get to there. So, you know, everybody had to learn everything.
The player that rubs, where do they go when they brush? I'm going to say rub. Listener, he says, Coach Stanzik says brush. Do they go out to the baseline? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so I feed the – I'm the point guard. I feed the ball to the 5 coming up at that elbow, that mid area. What are my options? What is the first option that you taught?
First option we taught was going away. Okay. And that's the starting point. Really, we don't have a reason why we did that. That's just what everybody else did. So – we just copied that, and we'd go away and we'd set a split screen, you know, with our wing. So that split screen is just kind of when 2 players come together and we're setting a screen for each other. And out of that, basically 1 player is going in, 1 player is coming out, and which one goes in or what angle they take is dependent on the defense. Mm-hmm. But we really like to try to get our bigger guards in there and get them to hop in front and try to get a quick high low in the middle of the lane. That's ideal if we can. But that hands back. So after 1 goes in, 1 stepping out, you know, a lot of times defenders see that person cutting in, especially switching teams. You know, if he curls or he rejects, both of them go in. We got a lot of those shots where the person screening just stepped back because both of them dove with the cutter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. We got that same shot quite a bit. So, let's say that that player that's at the split screen pops, they get the ball back. Did you go straight to a ball screen action from there? Did you kind of, was that a read as well?
No, that's, yeah, we would go, we would bring our post over there. We wouldn't always set a ball screen. Sometimes we'd ghost it to the corner. Sometimes we'd slip it. You know, so it really depends on who was throwing. Like I said, that could end up being a guard. So we try not to set a bunch of guard to guard ball screens. It's too easy to switch. But if it's a post, for sure, he's setting that screen or we're slipping down. If it's a guard, he's going that way. And then we're playing out of that ball screen. You know, we're using the ball screen and trying to get in the lane. We're rolling. And that person that rubbed through, that went to the corner, he's going to shake up behind that ball screen. So we got a pick and roll action with a shake behind. And that's really, really tough to guard because a lot of time your mid or, you know, the person that's supposed to be tagging that roll defender is going to be that person in the corner. And it's hard to get up through all of that to get that shake.
So the player that came off the split screen, they cleared out to the opposite side?
Yeah, they clear out. They get out to, you know, the short corner out over there. And a lot of times we follow up with a pin down on that side. So you got the ball screen and the roll and the shake on ball side. And then on the off side, you've got a pin down screen from the short corner. So you've got all five players involved, and that's what was easy. You know, once you pick up the basic actions, is that you've got this ball side action, backside yep. action, and a lot of them are really similar, regardless of where the ball is, whether it's in the corner or the top. You know, you're usually doing a lot of the same kind of stuff. So that person that rejects, they get in. You know, we really want to, depending on the player, we really want to look at the high low in the middle of the lane. They don't get it. They get out to the short corner, and we're setting that backside pin action as we come off the ball screen.
So the first option is set the split. We call that rub away,
mm-hmm.
or what did you point away?
Yeah, either one. Point away. Yeah, we call it point.
If I say rub, that's what I call it.
No, I'm good
because I like it because we had it, and we're just having a basketball conversation here, and I hope the listener enjoys it. So we had it set up where we're four out. Post was ball side. This was a few years ago. We went to state tournament, did a really good job running this stuff. And so if I did a dribble handoff with the wing, that signal we go into chin. If I or I would just come down, the point guard could come down and rub his chest or wave that other kid down. So we had an option to go straight into point, straight into chin. And then if I passed it to the wing, then that also got us to a two guard set, an old John Beilein set. So really mm-hmm. we would come down and again, I made calls out loud. I know every coach says they don't want to call stuff from the bench. I know it, but if the point guard just dribble handoff chin, I can wave you down physically with my hand, or I can pass the wing that got a little two guard, which eventually brought the big up to the high post once it went through some options. So what I liked about this style of play is, for me, the ball, where the ball was, told the players what they were going to be in. And we actually did a lot of chin back then. And then chin, you know, after two rotations, the big could pop, then you're in five out, and then we could do two passes and we go straight back into point.
Yeah, we'd go over, and that's, you know, really kind of the same thing. You know, the thing, you know, why I feel it's kind of simple is it's a lot of the same stuff. It's, you know, 7-8 ingredients, and it's just repackaged in a lot of different ways. So, you know, if there's something, you know, preventing you from going away, or if we just gone away the last 3 or 4 times and we go over the pinch post, which, you know, we're going the same side. So if the pinch comes up and catches it, instead of going away from him, we're going over him towards that other wing that wasn't on the same side as the point guard. And we're setting a split screen on that side. You know, same thing. You're looking to, you know, reject curl, or the screener can slip, or, you know, tricky thing that we did, we called it a wash, wrap, and screen him, where it looks like I'm curling. The curler comes down and he sets a screen for the screener, and the screener pops back. And that was actually, we got a lot of really good shots off of that. The same thing, one's going in, one's coming out.
So, and I'll send you some clips of this as well, what I'm about to describe. So we would, we may be saying the same things, but so I, we would go point, rubbing through. I hit the post at, you know, the opposite elbow. I would go over him, and then the player would stay towards on the baseline because my guy who brushed through is on the opposite side. And I would set a screen, and we had a couple of calls. We, he pretty much just slipped it every time. Just, I said, so he'd go back door. The point guard would pop up at the free throw line extended, and he would just get an open side screen. But we set the screen with the big facing square to the sideline. And yeah, we rejected this screen 100% of the time and got layups. And that was really, really good for us. And we're describing kind of the same action there, but I think you set yours. I think you made it a true split screen.
Yeah, we did. But I actually really like that. I would be interested in seeing that. But yeah, we set the split screen just the same as we do in a way over there.
Yeah, I would say the one thing we didn't do a great job of, and it wasn't bad, but to run it with more pace. Just run it with more pace. That way, you know, because you've got some weak side actions going on, some ball side actions going on. That way, it's just a little quicker, so guys just can't sit there and think about the help side. So, did you do a rub through where the point guard would just cut straight through the middle if they fed the elbow player? The, I guess Princeton terminology, they call it the P. What was, so that was a third option potentially off of the series. Coaches, I want to talk to you for just a second about why you should seriously consider getting a Dr. Dish. First of all, their payment plan system is unreal. 12 months, no interest. I paid half up front, and then I paid the other half over the next 365 days, and I have a brand new Dr. Dish CT. On top of that, it's just the best shooting machine out there. The CT is so user-friendly, as are all their shooting machines. So reach out to Dr. Dish. Tell them you heard about them on the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast and receive a discount. You won't regret it. Your players will get better. They'll get shots up, more reps up, and you'll become a better basketball team. Reach out to Dr. Dish. Follow them on all social media at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Now back to our guest.
Yeah, you don't get that one as much, but that one's really, really great against those high-pressure teams, which is, you know, that's the whole reason, you know, that we ended up on this in the first place. So, you know, if they're pressuring that post pass and they're up on you, that's a great almost give and go that alleviates a lot of that pressure. So you see that on film a couple of times, or if you hit a backdoor or, you know, a through action a couple of times in a game, now all of a sudden that pressure that you were worried about has been alleviated some because you've gotten that backdoor action. So, we wouldn't get that one as much, but when we did, it was really, really valuable. So having that option of just going straight through was really valuable. And then if that was the case, then he just becomes, it's almost like we set the split screen. He just becomes the one that was in, the person he would have split screened, he pops up right to that spot, and we can continue on with our action from there.
No, that's really good. I'm actually pulling up Huddle right now so we get off the call. I can show you some clips and we can talk about it. But I don't want to get too over detailed. I know people are driving in their car, listening on the way to work and things like that. So let's talk about what were some of the struggles of putting this in.
Yeah. I mean, early on, the struggles are pretty universal. You've got guys that, that are in the deep end, so to speak, and they're trying to swim, and, you know, you're trying to drink from a fire hose, to start with. So just getting guys to believe that this is possible at some point. You know, one thing that we did over the summer, we had a point guard that was on the team he was a 4-year varsity player, really one of the better players in the area. So we called him up in the summer and said, hey, listen, what do you think about this? You know, this is what we're thinking about. And kind of watched some film with him at little points throughout the summer. We'd kind of talk with those guys and get them to where they understood it first. And I thought, you know, that was really helpful, kind of having almost an accelerated group to where you are teaching them the thing a day before you teach to the rest of the team. So it's not just you saying, hey, here's what we're doing. and then we're doing this breakdown drill. You've got four or five guys that you've already explained this to and that really understand it, also doing it. So they can be at the front of the line, and then as you're maybe coaching this person over here, if somebody else is unsure, they can kind of help you and back you up. So we've really got great kids in that sense, to where we kind of have these team captains that that were willing to come up and learn it first. You know, the struggles in game, I think, you know, it was definitely one that we talked about, was that it kind of gets predictable. And then, like you said, it's hard to continue playing with pace. You know, we were pretty good in the transition. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we were running this, we sacrificed a little transition because everybody's thinking, okay, I need to get to my X. I need to, am I going to be the brush, or am I supposed to dive here, or, you know, whatever the case is. So, you know, one of the struggles was learning to play in transition and then transition into this half court offense.
So after running this offense for, you know, a year or two and learning it even more, what individual skill sets did you think were important for your players?
Well, one of the things that, you know, that kind of would come out of left field is the ability to cut. The ability to really make hard cuts. And, you know, we have a really good football program up here, so we were able to kind of connect with some of the football coaches, the receiver coaches, on how they're able to make their cuts on the football field. And we took some of those drills on how to make our cuts, you know, dropping your hip, planting your foot, taking a straight step towards your goal. You know, so the ability to cut is really fundamental to all of this. Out of those split screens and your curls, they can't get wide out and be looping. They've got to be sharp. You know, so the ability to cut is huge. The ability to shoot is one. And I'll plug one of your sponsors. We've got several Dr. Dishes up here, and we utilize those a lot. And it really, really was helpful in being able to shoot the three, because now you can't just sag off like the pack line teams. You know, you can kind of eliminate some of the cuts by just sagging in. So being able to shoot does help. But, you know, guys, for me, guys that love the game enough that this stuff is interesting to them is really important. Because if you have, you know, kind of halfway in, halfway out interest, you're going to miss a lot of the intricacies. You could know after this pass is made, I'm going from point A to point B, but, you know, the speed in which you go, or should I sprint and then stop before I go out to this next place? You know, a lot of those details are really important if you're going to run it really well.
Well, Coach, any, you know, if a coach is thinking about, first of all, mention how a coach can get a hold of you if they've got some questions, an email, social media. What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, my Twitter is at Coach Stanzak. Stanzak, Stanczak. You know, I was really lucky in studying this, that so many people, I mean, Princeton is a whole community within the basketball community. I mean, guys really, really love this. So I was really lucky in connecting with a lot of people that were willing to help me. I'd love the opportunity to help anyone else. So if they reach out to me through my DMs, we can get set up with anything. And anything I got, you know, that helps share the game, I'd love to help them.
Yeah, and I'll on the United Basketball Plus website, I have Coach Kamara with UAH, who learned from Lenny Acuff, who's not Lipscomb, gave an hour and 45-minute unbelievably detailed breakdown of essentially Princeton offense. And I also have Kevin Carroll, who works at Lipscomb now, talk a lot, going to four out one in, which is a lot of Princeton principles. So I have those videos people can watch there. Well, Coach, thanks a lot for talking about an issue that's kind of tough to cover on a podcast, but I think we did a pretty solid job with it. And man, let's stay connected and you know, connect on these things more often.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Love the podcast. Can't wait to hear more. We'll